This Friday, Donald Trump will be sworn in as the President of the United States of America. While supporters are excited for the big day and the beginning of undivided Republican-controlled government, Trump's set to begin his new role with record-setting low approval ratings.
Most presidents have a honeymoon period with more shows of bipartisanship and general goodwill, but questions remain about how long or short a Trump honeymoon might be.
The Trump camp says do polls still matter given their failure to predict this year's election? We'll look at that question now and who is and isn't attending Inauguration Day. Wisconsin Congressman Sean Duffy has this to say about Inauguration Day boycotts by Democrats in Congress.
That's bad for the country. Show up, be part of it. Put your big boy pants on and let's start working together.
Paul Nolet joins us now. He's an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Hi, great to be here.
Well, Paul, I want to start with Donald Trump's approval ratings heading into Inauguration Day. Where are they right now?
Well, right now they're about at 40% to maybe 45%. And just to put that in historical context, it's considerably lower than what most president-elects have at this point, just prior to their inauguration. For example, President Obama, when he was still president-elect a few days before his inauguration, had approval ratings that actually got close to about 80%. And even George W. Bush, who, of course, came into office after a very contested election, one that was ultimately settled by the Supreme Court, at this point in his just prior to the inauguration was in the 60s for his approval rating. So Trump is quite a bit lower than that.
Are there any presidents that come to mind that went in with a lower approval rating, lower than 40?
No, not coming into office. If you look at Trump's approval ratings right now, they're a lot more reminiscent of maybe, you know, a president who's been in office for a few years. So it's not unusual, say, even for President Obama to have approval ratings come down to 40% or so at some point during the presidency. But to see it that low at the start of a presidency is really, at least in the history of polling, which started right around the time of FDR in the middle of the 20th century. Ever since then, this is really kind of unprecedented how low the approval ratings are for Trump coming into office.
Now, in terms of approval ratings, presidents have taken them pretty seriously historically, and it's something that may be changing now. We're working out what happens next, but looking at why they've mattered in the past, how would you explain that?
Well, a lot of times presidents may say, oh, you know, I don't pay any attention to the polls and I just do what's right and that sort of thing. But really, I think inevitably presidents do pay attention to the general trend of polls. And I think part of it is because inevitably that's going to have an effect on how other important institutions of government interact with the president. So if, say, Trump's approval ratings really start to shoot up for whatever reason in the first months of his term, then I think that's going to give a lot more confidence to Congress, both the House and the Senate, to kind of go along with what Trump wants in his first 100 days. But if his approval ratings stay where they are and even go down potentially, that's going to scare off a lot of senators and representatives who might be a lot more skeptical to go along with what Trump has to say.
Now, most presidents can expect a honeymoon period of cooperation, maybe increased goodwill, bipartisanship on Capitol Hill when they first enter office, those first period of days or weeks and months there. What do you expect for Donald Trump?
I think it's going to be quite a bit different. And I think the inauguration boycott that's been organized by, it looks like, about 50 or maybe even over 50 Democratic politicians at this point seems to indicate that it's going to be a pretty hard landing, I think, for Trump coming into office. And that's in many ways different than what previous presidents have seen, even recent presidents. So one thing that I think is easy to forget when you think about the Obama presidency, which, of course, has been very contentious in many ways, very polarizing over the last 8 years between Republicans and Democrats. Nevertheless, when he came into office, I alluded to before, he had high approval ratings. There was a lot of, good feelings that were expressed, at least in polls, by not just Democrats, but Republicans and independents as well. But what we're seeing now is Democrats, even before Trump enters office, saying, I don't know if we can work with this person, with this new president, and we just don't trust him to do the right thing. And like I mentioned before, for that to happen during the course of a presidency is not unusual. But that for it to happen right at the start is in fact, pretty unusual.
On the other hand, you know, Democrats are in the minority. So if it comes to a honeymoon period, I mean, couldn't that mean that the honeymoon might last about 4 years?
It's possible. In this case, I don't even know if I would characterize it as a honeymoon period, because when you think of sort of a honeymoon period in the context of a presidency, it is a situation in which members of both parties tend to say, oh, yeah, I'm willing to work across the aisle and let's give the new president a chance and let's see what we can get done. But there hasn't been a whole lot of that rhetoric right at the start. It's been much more contentious. But that's exactly right. One of the big advantages that Trump has is that both houses of Congress are firmly under Republican control. And so that's going to make it certainly easier than if we had divided government. It's going to make it easier for Trump to get a number of his priorities through Congress. But nevertheless, as I mentioned before, if Trump's approval ratings stay where they are or even decline, it's going to make it a lot harder for some members, particularly vulnerable members in Congress, to stick with Trump and to stick with somebody that, say, Trump goes into the 30s for an approval rating. You're going to see a lot of them say, you know what, I'm going to worry more about my own election than kind of march in step with Donald Trump.
Paul Mollett is with us right now from Marquette University, and we're talking about what it looks like in the lead up to Inauguration Day for Donald Trump. And looking ahead past Inauguration Day, what can we expect in those first 100 days or so?
It's going to be quite interesting because Trump has promised a lot of things. Even on day one, a number of things he said he was going to do. And so what I would expect is a number of policy changes right off the bat. So one thing that was, I think, pretty apparent with the Obama administration is that after, especially those first 2 years of his presidency, where he had a friendly Congress, democratically controlled Congress, after he had a much more difficult time trying to get legislation through Congress, he turned much more to executive orders and executive actions to get policy made. So that was true in immigration. It was true with climate change and other environmental programs. And I think because of that, because Obama went in that direction, maybe out of necessity, it will in some ways be easier for Trump to reverse those, certainly within the first 100 days, and maybe perhaps even on day one, or at least in the first few days, by issuing his own executive orders, own executive actions that reverse what Obama did. So one thing that I think is going to be very prominent on a number of issues, big hot-button issues too, like immigration and the environment, you're going to see Trump take pretty strong actions to try to reverse those executive actions that Obama did.
Now, building a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border was a priority in the Trump campaign. Do you see that as being something that he could feasibly take action on in 100 days?
I think that's going to be difficult, in part because it's never been exactly clear what he meant by the wall. I mean, there were a lot of adjectives there about a big, beautiful wall that's going to be all around the border. But for instance, where would the funding come from? I mean, President-elect Trump mentioned, well, Mexico is going to pay for the wall, but I mean, Mexico is going to have a lot of resistance to that idea, and getting a negotiated deal where Mexico actually does agree to pay for that wall within 100 days seems, to me anyway, probably pretty unlikely. So if the funding isn't there, then the question is, well, how does a wall happen? How does Trump managed to back up his promises throughout the campaign on that particular issue? So I think at a few points during the campaign, he even mentioned on day one, you know, construction is going to start on the wall, but I think it's going to take quite a bit longer than that.
Paul Millett is with us right now. He's an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. And we're talking about the lead up to Inauguration Day for Donald Trump and what to expect in his first 100 days.
And we want to know what you think at 800-642-1234. Looking at Democrats, what do you think of Democratic members of Congress boycotting Inauguration Day? What do you think about the back and forth between President-elect Trump and Congressman John Lewis? And on the Republican side, what are you looking for from the president? And should Republicans in Congress defer to the president-elect when their priorities don't match up? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Paul Millett is with us, assistant professor of political science at Marquette University, and we're discussing the lead up to Inauguration Day for Donald Trump coming up this Friday.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Should Democrats look for ways to cooperate with the president-elect or resist his agenda? What do you make the role of Republicans in Congress? Should they follow the Donald Trump agenda, the Republican agenda we've seen in recent years, or a hybrid of the two? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go to our callers now. Let's talk first with Charlie in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi. Thank you for giving or letting me talk. I wanted to mention that I hope that with Donald Trump's inauguration, as a conservative, I hope the other side, the Democrats, continue to voice their opposition. I think that the only way that we're going to unify and get together is by having both sides express their views, and by expressing their views, come to some type of consensus. One side doing it all their way is not going to work for anything, and it's just going to continue to cause more problems. We need to go to the middle. Thank you.
Charlie, thank you for that call. Appreciate it. And Paul, do you think there's appetite there? I mean, in a sense, when you've got the numbers game so strong on the Republican side, there's not necessarily a strong necessity to talk across the aisle. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I know one of the big criticisms that Republicans had of President Obama, particularly in those first 2 years when there were big Democratic majorities in Congress, was that he didn't try hard enough to work across the aisle and try to get some Republicans to go along with health care reform, for instance, which was mostly passed along partisan lines. And so I think the big question, and I think Charlie puts his finger on something important here, the question is, will the Republican Congress say, look, we're in the same position that Democrats were in 2009, so we're just going to try to push some things through while we have the numbers? Or are they going to try to work across the aisle on some bipartisan solutions? It's tough, though, and it's not entirely clear which direction they're going to go. But the tough part is that really, I mean, one thing that's become quite apparent over the last few years, both, you know, between journalists and scholars looking at all of this, is that the distance between the parties, which we refer to as polarization, the ideological distance between the parties has really grown to levels that really we haven't seen since the 19th century. And so that in many ways makes it harder to work across that aisle and to try to find solutions, especially on big hot button issues like immigration and healthcare. It makes it very difficult to try to find those points of contention. And a lot of times it requires a lot of really kind of back and forth, and also some important political entrepreneurship from leaders in Congress and the executive branch as well to make that happen. So we'll see if it happens.
Well, Charlie, thank you so much for that question. And we're going to go next to Scott joining us in Eau Claire. Scott, hi.
Hi. I guess I had a comment about Trump getting in there. Once he's in the office there, I think they understand what he's trying to push across in his policies. I really feel everybody will kind of come together. But this polling thing really kind of bothers me. It takes you back to the campaign when the polling seemed to be going Hillary's way. But you got to really look at, I think it's kind of the same basis that you're trying to say that the approval rating. Well, The polling is kind of like a phone connection. Everything's changed. Everything's on cell phones, Twitter. The polling polling thing has to be changed because it's not coming out the way they say. It's not even close.
Scott, thank you for that. Yeah, you're bringing up a point, an interesting point there, one that the Trump camp has made themselves. You know, why should we care about polling? It wasn't right in the general election. And besides, the Trump campaign, Donald Trump seems to operate a little bit independent of polls. And there was a key Republican whose name escapes me now, quoted in the New York Times, Paul, who said that polling was now considered, to him, a false god. So why should we worry if Trump, what should Republicans care if Donald Trump is coming in at a lower approval rating?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the polls themselves go, was it a great year for polling this past year? Definitely not. And polling, I think, is, while a science, it's an inexact science. And and I think Scott mentioned, for instance, you know, the fact that a lot more people have cell phones now and can ignore calls makes it more difficult to conduct polls. I will say, though, that once the final numbers were in and we had all of the election results confirmed across the states, kind of surprisingly, given how it looked those first couple days after the election, the national polls weren't all that off. They were a bit off, but of course, at the end of the day, Hillary Clinton did win the popular vote, which is what the polls are measuring, by about 2 percentage points. And the polls had her, you know, maybe more around 3% or something like that at the end of the day. So I would say that the polls, while there's certainly some work that pollsters are going to have to make going forward, they weren't quite as bad as they may have looked in the first couple of days after the election. And then as far as the second point goes about why should anyone care about this, I think a big part of that is not necessarily Trump himself caring that he has a 40% approval rating or less than that or more than that, but it has a lot to do with how others react to him. And I think one of the points that I made early on in the program was, especially for those vulnerable Republicans that are in swing districts or even Democratic-leaning districts, it's going to be tough for them as we get closer to the 2018 and then the 2020 elections. It's going to be tough for a lot of them to stick with Trump if Trump's approval rating is really, really poor.
And we leave it there. Paul, thank you for joining us. Paul Nolet, assistant professor at Marquette University.